The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. And what I'd like to talk about today was inspired by a particular description of a concentrated mind that appears repeatedly in the ancient teachings of the Buddha. So I'll read it, one translation of it now, and then that'll be the introduction to giving this talk. And in this case, the Buddha is talking about his own mind when it was concentrated. And here's the description. And perhaps as you hear these different words that describe a concentrated mind, perhaps you could see if there's any reference point that you have in your own life for your mind or your body or your sense of being that somehow relates to some of these words. My mind was concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attain to imperturbability. How often can you describe your mind that way? So I was looking at this recently and inspired by it and looked at the ancient Pali version of the words. It's to kind of live with the words for a while. And so it inspired this talk on concentration. And, you know, I'm a meditation teacher, so it's nice to, I think part of one of my jobs is to talk about meditation and to support people in their meditation practice and maybe to inspire people in meditation. And one of the important components of meditation practice that we teach is concentration, or something we call samadhi. And it's one of the great gifts, it's one of the great capacities of the mind, because it's a way of integrating the mind. It's the way of bringing the mind into a certain kind of harmony that is often not the case when people and people's lives are fragmented, the minds are fragmented, caught up in many concerns and activities. And many people who begin to meditate, or even people who meditated for a long time, even I do still sometimes when I sit down to meditate, will discover that my mind is jumping around quite a bit. It has many concerns. It goes after chasing after its thoughts, or the thoughts got me by the nose. And it's not just one thought, but sometimes I'm really, you know, zeroed in on a particular theme. But sometimes it's just amazing how it jumps around. And a concentrated mind is a mind which is not jumping around. A concentrated mind is a mind that is not inclined to chase or grab or grasp onto its thoughts, its ideas, its feelings. And to get to become concentrated, to discover this integrated, unified, holistic sense of the mind, it does take a lot of mindfulness. It takes a lot of self-awareness of what's going on in the mind, what's happening inside. And when people start looking at the mind, they discover sometimes quite surprising things. Sometimes the mind is an entertainment center. Sometimes it's a control center. Sometimes it's standing guard at the ramparts, defending itself from all possible dangers. And to start discovering what the mind is up to is quite fascinating. Recently I was learned about this myth, a Greek myth called the myth of Gyges, I think it's pronounced. And it's in from Plato's writings or pieces. And it has to do with a shepherd who discovers there's a certain earthquake or something, opens up this hole in the ground, So he goes to investigate, and he finds in that hole a buried big bronze horse statue. But somehow there's holes in it, and he sees that inside there's a dead person. It's an extremely large person who apparently has only wearing a ring. So the shepherd takes the ring and goes along fine for a while and wears it, and one day turns the ring around so that the little gem, I guess, that's on it is facing inward towards the palm, I guess. And because he's in a group of other people, discovers that he becomes invisible. And when he turns it back, the ring, then it becomes visible. So that's an interesting thing. And so he somehow manages to become a servant or a messenger for the king, so he has access to the palace. Is it good enough? And he uses his capacity to be invisible to make his way into the chambers of the queen, and there succeeds at seducing her. And then he uses his capacity to be invisible to go make his way into the chambers of the king and kill the king and become king himself. So I don't know the rest of the myth, but but that's enough. This myth has to do with ethics. Has to do with how people behave when they're seen, and when they behave when they're not seen, when they're invisible. And I think it's the idea of Plato that people are very much motivated by the reputation, how other people see them and what other people think. And so if you're invisible, you can do things without any effect on your reputation. And you can do all, there's no restraints maybe to people. So the question is, what would you do when people can't see you? And for, the idea is, would you do things that are supportive and helpful for the world? Would you be an angel who went around and picked up after people or something? Or would you take advantage of this amazing power to kind of become wealthy and all kinds of things that you can get? What would you do? What would you do if you were invisible? Well, in thinking about this myth, I was thinking, well, kind of, there's two areas in modern life where this is quite relevant. One has to do with people's use of the web. It's probably in a way that would be a magic power in the ancient world to be invisible. We could navigate the whole world with the web in a privacy of our own kind of home without anybody knowing what we were looking at, what we were doing, and how we were interacting in the world. And I've known people, I knew one person who had so many aliases on the web, so on Yahoo, I think, that Yahoo sent an email and said, you can't have that many. What do people do? What do you do on the web when no one sees? Is it this shopping channel? Is it pornography? Is it war zone stuff? Is it what do you do? What is it? Cat pictures, cat videos, what is it? And is this helpful for you? Is it supportive for you? Is it healthy for you or healthy for the world to be involved in that? The other place where the mind is, where we're kind of invisible to the world, is what we do in the privacy of our own mind. And how would you feel if other people, your mind was broadcast on the wall here, came to meditate at IMC, and we chose one of you, and different days, and we would just, broadcast what goes on inside. And would people go, oh, that's so nice. That's so inspiring. Or would it be, would you be horrified that people are watching and seeing what goes on in your mind, what goes on in there? And is what you see in your own mind, if you saw it on the wall, would you be kind of horrified? Would you be shocked? And I say that a little bit seriously because it's a very, the distracted mind distracts itself by its distractions. that we're so kind of consumed sometimes of what we think, we don't necessarily see the patterns and the themes that we keep repeating over and over again. Or it's easy not to kind of take it in, the import of what we're doing with our minds, doing it over and over again. But if you see it in the wall, say, now I got to admit it. Now I got to really see what's going on. Is this what I want to be doing with my mind? Am I just required to continue having my mind operate the way it always operates? Is this what the mind is supposed to be doing? Or are there alternatives to it? So is the mind a control center, an entertainment center, or a guard center? What is your mind? And there are other options for what the mind can be for us. And that's when we come into this world of concentration and meditation. The mind can be a laboratory where we discover and explore and experiment with what's going on inside. The mind can be a sanctuary where we go into the sanctuary. It feels like a refuge or a place of safety, a place where we get nourished. It can be a sacred temple. And so more than just a sanctuary, it's a place that inspires us and opens up vistas of peace or wisdom or compassion or love in a beautiful way. What do you see in your mind? What goes on in your mind? What do you see, and what are you? How are you contending with it? What are you doing about your mind? Are you merrily going along? Are you not really? Are you kind of complacent with how your mind, what its mind does, or are you engaged in the process to, to change your mind in a way that is really healthy for you, maybe healthy for the world? And that's part of what we do in practice of concentration. It is, the idea is to move the mind towards a very healthy state, a state of wholesomeness or wholeness, a state of integration, some people like to talk about it. So it's we start seeing that the mind, what the mind does, and again, many times the ordinary mind people have, people take it for granted. This is our birthright. This is how it is. It's always been this way. Sometimes it's even invisible to them. It's like the fish doesn't supposed to not see the water it swims in. It can be invisible to us what's really going on inside and what we're thinking and what we're doing. And the part of the laboratory of meditation is to start really seeing and what we do. And I think it's sobering to be able to see that how much the mind grasps onto and chases and searches and wants its thoughts, its feelings, its ideas, its fantasies, its plans, its memories. And it's kind of chasing and doing, like grabbing on. And it's so common, it's such a common phenomena for human beings to do this. And so kind of second nature or so integral to how they experience themselves, that their sense of self is often closely tied to this movement of grasping and wanting and doing. And it's kind of inconceivable that we could be alive, or a self, or it could be a person, without that kind of activity of the mind, doing, wanting, getting, grasping, trying to, analyze, repair, fix, all kinds of things it's always trying to do. And in doing so, the mind is very much involved with the content of the mind. And so our thoughts, ideas, our feelings are the content, is what awareness, what attention, what the mind is focused on. In meditation, an important part of meditation practice and cultivating concentration and mindfulness as well is to shift the attention from being preoccupied with the content of the mind to understanding the context of the mind. What's the context for having all those thoughts, all those ideas, mind jumping around? And what's the wider kind of, maybe some people call it the background or the context or the frame of reference, or what's the overall mood or state that the mind is in when it's doing that? And sometimes we can feel that the distracted mind, the jumping around mind, the fragmented mind, has a mood or a state which itself is agitated, which is unsteady, which is filled with not such nice thoughts and feelings and intentions and ideas. Maybe it's a small percentage for all of you good people here, but you know, occasionally they come through, something that you don't want to see projected on the wall, and that this ancient tradition might call a blemish in this translation I gave, and I call them our foibles. See our foibles come through? I feel foibles is kind of friendly. The mind is not still. It's constantly moving and going and moving around. There's also the mind can be quite cloudy. It can be kind of dull or dense, and so there's not a lot of clarity because we're kind of ingrained or we're absorbed in what we're thinking about, and you know we can kind of get lost in that inner world, and we kind of lose ourselves. There's no the clear self, the knowing self, the self that's cognizant of, or the mind that's cognizant, gets lost as we get pulled into this world of thinking. And so to cultivate concentration is to begin reclaiming the mind from its distraction. An unconcentrated mind is a distracted mind. A concentrated mind is an undistracted mind. Not only is it undistracted, but when the concentration gets strong, it's undistractable. As the mind begins to settle down, it's still very distractible. And you can get a little bit focused. Maybe you're successful to stay with two breaths in your meditation. Wow, two breaths. And then along comes a wonderful thought. And then 5 minutes later, you wake up. Wow, you know, where was I? And if you trace back what you were thinking about, it was a long journey, you know, that chain of associations. One thing led to another. So you got seduced or pulled into it. And so, but to become concentrated enough, still enough, that the mind is not distractible is a beautiful thing. And it allows a kind of coming together. Sometimes they talk about gathering together of the mind. Integration is the word I like today. So how do we do this? Generally, it's done by doing something very, very simple. I feel very fortunate that when I started my Zen practice, when I started meditating when I was about 20, the instruction I was given was to count the breaths. And so I've been doing breath counting on and off now for, well over 40 years. I still love it. I still find it useful. But I did a lot of it when I was young. And that was kind of the doorway for me into discovering the worlds of concentration, discovering myself, the mind, the capacity of the mind to become integrated and whole. Counting the breath is an ancient tradition. It goes back in ancient Buddhism. They gave that advice, and it's a kind of classic Buddhist teaching. It doesn't work for everyone, but it's a nice, it's a generically a good thing to a reference point for talking about this process of concentration. So how I taught myself to count the breath is to count from 1 to 10, and the primary count is on the exhale. And because my mind is so powerful, my distracted mind, my thinking mind is so powerful, I can't give it any, I have to be very careful not to give it any little quarter, any little, space, so that it, off it goes, So what I do with my count is I say the number in a very extended, drawn-out way, the length of the exhale. So I would go, if I get first one, I would go, one. If I do a checklist approach, one. there's so much idle time, that I'll fill. So it might be a little bit mantric in the sense of using a sound to kind of fill the mind, but then I also learned that as I say that one. At the same time, simultaneously, there's a releasing that goes on. It's kind of like letting go and settling. So it's kind of settling and relaxing. So I'm kind of letting go in some subtle way. Just each time, one, like kind of like ah, like that. In particular, a relaxing of the thinking muscle. I think of there's the energy, the tension, the pressure that can be associated with thinking, especially if thinking is intense. I kind of, I find it useful to think of it as a muscle. And then I'll soften that thinking muscle, that tension or energy. And it's not very dramatic each time, but it's at least something to do to keep me focused. There's two things of staying with the breathing, feeling it, sensing it. I feel it in the belly and the torso. Doing the count that fills the whole exhale. And then releasing something, in, softening the thinking mind, softening the body. I found very, very useful for me. And for one thing, that softening is an antidote for the tendency people have to get intense in concentrating, to get concentrated in a contracted way. And contractedness is not useful for the purposes of this. It's really a relaxed. When I first went to practice in Thailand, I flew into Bangkok and where does a meditator crash? So I crashed at a little monastery in downtown Bangkok. And so the first morning I woke up and talking to some monk and about meditation. And I got my first little teaching. And I was told, he said, concentration is all about letting go. Okay. That was news to me. So that was nice. But anyway, so I've learned this kind of, to release. And then on the inhale, I'll do the count as well, but I do the same count. So actually, when I do one, I start with the inhale, and I say one. And then on the exhale, I do this long one. On the inhale, I also kind of fill the inhale with the sound of one. But I've learned that it has to be like a feather touch. It has to be super light. It's almost like I'm imagining I'm doing the one. Whereas on the exhale, I can do a little bit more like I'm doing it in my mind. But the one, for some reason, I have to do it very tenderly and lightly on the inhale. Otherwise, I mess it all up. Somehow I get agitated or something. And so it's very gently I say, one. That's probably even too loud. But, and sometimes if I if the breath goes really long, and sometimes the breath is not smooth, but it goes really kind of slow and a little bit, it goes kind of like step by step, exhale or inhale. And then I can't quite go one, so nice. So I'll kind of go like little echo, like one, 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 like that. And then comes two. And if I'm lucky, I'll remember what count I'm at and do three. And then I might get to three, and then I might do three over again because I'm not sure exactly. So all kinds of odd things happen. The idea is if you lose count or if you mess up, the usual instruction is just go back to one and start over again, and just kind of go through it again. But I'm kind of permissive. If I think I've done three twice, so that's okay. I'll just continue from there. Or if it's my best guess is I'm at four, okay. Keep it simple. And and then what I've learned is that I can get concentrated or settled, or the mind can get settled without necessarily getting proficient at going from one to ten. It's just doing the exercise. So I don't get wrapped up about, like, I have to get to ten. I'm just content to be doing it. A Zen priest I know, a friend of mine, went to practice in Japan, and he says that his teacher also taught breath counting, but the instruction was to count to one and then start over again. And so that was nice to hear, and so that kind of loosened up this idea that it has to be like, that the goal is to get smoothly from one to ten. And so then I'm more relaxed. As time develops, the mind gets settled. So I think of the counting and doing this as also when you do have one to ten though, So there's four things the mind is engaged in: experiencing or feeling the breath, doing the count, relaxing on the exhale, releasing. On the inhale, this very light touch of the inhale, there's also a releasing I do. But the exhale, it's releasing down and settled. On the inhale, because I guess things are filling going up, it's more like I release up into the sky my thinking mind. It's kind of that's the movement. Very subtle. That is very, very subtle. So those are three things. So the breath, the count, the releasing. And the fourth is remembering where you are in the count. And that takes, you know, I could count from 1 to 10 pretty quickly and fluently in front of all of you. But in this, quiet and settled, focused way of my mind, this meditation, it's a little harder. So there I have to engage the mind a little bit more actively to remember the count. But it's not a big deal. It's not like I have to try to, remember my parents' phone number when I was a kid or something. Like, what was that? And so those four things gather the mind and keeps the mind from thinking about other things. So in this regard, I think of the counting as the windshield wiper of the mind. Thoughts will keep coming in, but they keep gently being kind of, there's no space for them. They get washed away, they get wiped away. And as long as I kind of stay on track, there's not actually a lot of room for a lot of thinking. Little thoughts will creep in, and then the windshield wipe works. And I find it still to this day quite amazing how quickly these thoughts creep in. It's like, not just 0 to 60 in half a second. It's like 0 to 6,000, or something. It's like, I read recently that amazing, I don't know where they came up with this number, but someone tried to do a study and said that the average person has 70,000 distracted thoughts a day. And I tried to do the math, and that comes to 60, if the person is asleep 7 hours at night, so there's, I guess, 17 hours of being awake, that's 68 distracted thoughts every minute. So that's 68 TPM. And that's like a lot. I mean, I can't be that much. So then I saw that. I've told you this, right? Like, now we have a new idea. Thoughts per minute? What's your TMP? And so now I can have a new concern. Is my TMP average? Am I kind of slow? Maybe I'm kind of dull, and my TMP, and I'm embarrassed now in front of all the rest of you. Maybe I have a really fast TMP, and is that good or is that bad? Or now I'm concerned about my TMP. Now you guys are going to have more. There's no shortage of things to think about and be concerned about. And so the windshield wiper comes along. One, two. And there's less and less room to be thinking. And what happens like that is that slowly the energy of thinking begins to dissipate. The tendency to grab and to search and to want begins to quiet down. And this is one of the reasons why the whole system, our psychophysical system, starts to relax when we get concentrated. A lot of the tension is carried in how we're relating to our thoughts and how we're chasing them or involved with them or fixing them or, afraid of them or, whatever. A lot of the emotions come out of these thinkings we do. And so as the thoughts, as we give less energy to thinking and more energy into this breathing, then the scatteredness, the fragmented, the jumping around, the chasing of things begins to quiet down. And the mind starts becoming less fragmented. And the energies of the mind start becoming settled. And as it gets more settled and less scattered and all that, then the mind's capacity to be aware becomes stronger. And some people, I like the word lucid awareness, because lucid, what that means to me is it's a reflexive awareness, where the awareness is strong enough, we know we're aware. And so now we're talking about the context of the mind. Awareness is the context, and that's the one in the primary context we're working with, the container, the holder of all this stuff. And when we start becoming aware of this holder of it all, we can start feeling that it becomes clearer and brighter. Some people use the language of light, like it feels like it's really like bright or filled with light, but clear light, meaning that you can't actually see the light. So it just feels, the mind feels that way, that it's just now clear or filled with light or just open and receptive. And then as the thinking mind quiets down, the blemishes or preoccupations or the imperfections or the foibles we have don't pull us so much. We're not grabbed by it. And so they kind of settle away and fall away, and the mind starts feeling cleaner or purer. There's a purity or cleanliness in the mind that goes on. So clean, bright, clear becomes qualities of the mind has. The mind also becomes quite soft. And this is a very important reference point for developing concentration, is we're looking for a soft mind, malleable mind. And so the idea of trying to get concentrated in a contracted way where we're hard and tough on ourselves and really pushing, we're going in the opposite direction that we want to go. And so we're looking for the mind becoming soft and malleable. As this begins happening, it feels very satisfying. It can feel like home. It can feel like, at some point, it becomes so nice that it becomes clear that when a thought arises in the mind, why would you ever want to get involved with that? Like, no thank you. I have it so good here. You know, it's like you've taken this wonderful bath or shower, you're completely clean, and you have completely nice, clean clothes, came right out of the dryer, they're nice and warm, and it's so cozy. And someone says to you, can you go out there and roll in the mud? Why would you do that? So why would you pick up these thoughts when you don't have to? And kind of, it feels a little bit almost dirty to do it, or, you know, agitated, or it feels, it's just kind of, it's so much, this is a better place to be, this settled, quiet, peaceful place. The thinking mind gets quieter, but it's very important as we develop concentration, at least I found for myself, to not have an all or nothing attitude. Like if you can just find that switch and you turn off the thoughts, then you'll do it right. And until that switch is found and you stop thinking, you're doing it wrong. Then, I'm not doing it right or something. It's a slow process of quieting and calming. And it's a beautiful, it's interesting process to watch, this laboratory of the mind, to watch the quality of your thinking as you get more and more concentrated. One of the things that begins to drop away first is discursive thinking, having conversations in your head, big judgments and analysis of what's going on. And there might be simpler and simpler thoughts. There might be individual thoughts that bubble up rather than a whole train of associated thinking going on. And these thoughts just float up. The thoughts begin having less substance, less weight, less density, less contraction. They're not so big. They become thinner. They become weaker. Some people refer to them as just like clouds traveling through an endless sky. Just like it's a cloud. That's all it is. It's just floating by. Because we're not grabbing onto it, there's very little tendency to want to identify the thought with me. That this says something of me, this is who I am, I think, therefore I am. It's just a thought. And you just let the thought drift by. And they get softer and weaker. And it becomes like a faint sound far in the distance. Or if we think in images, the image becomes more and more diffuse or less clear or feeling like it's further away or less detail or simpler and simpler that goes on. And sometimes it feels like there's most levels, both most and most levels of intensity around thinking has come to a stop, and there might be very, very rudimentary thoughts going on of recognition of what's happening, and those rudimentary thoughts of recognition of what's happening in the moment might just be in simple words or simple phrases, like, oh, the mind is clear, this is settled now, this is good. And having those thoughts is not a problem. They can actually be supportive. They're encouraging. Stay here. This is good. Be here. Be quiet. And so why do this? It's so foreign to the ordinary state of life, the ordinary mind that we have, that it can be frightening for some people. It's such an unknown place. It could be... It doesn't seem like it has any importance for me. The important life that I'm living is in my thoughts and ideas, is trying to resolve things, fix things, manage to do something with my life. And I have to solve things and get ahead. And so the world of thoughts is the world in which everything's important happens. And if we're not thinking, all that's important in my life is not present. Why should I be there? Why should I settle down? For one thing, that settled, quiet mind gives us a different vantage point from which to see the ordinary thinking mind. Well, we can actually study it and look at it more realistically. We're not so quickly pulled into its world and seduced by it, but we can see what's happening, and we learn we can have more choice. I like to use the word power, more choice about what we think and how we think, and be able to choose more productive, more healthy, more helpful ways of thinking, rather than have something which is unknown inside of us choose for us. And we're just going along with whatever, you know, the mind throws out. Some people, and not any of you, of course, but I've known some people who refer to some of the stuff in their mind as garbage and trash, and so... You know, it's not a very nice thing to say, so I won't say it. And but, you know, have more choice about what to do. We see it in a different way, and we can have more choice about what to do, what direction to do with the mind. Also, when the mind gets quiet and still from the thinking mind and has this real steadiness and clarity to it, it's able to see more deeply what's really going on in the deeper operating system of our minds, that we can't see when the mind is agitated and busy and chasing thoughts. And so the purpose for this in Buddhism is not to have a concentrated mind. That's not the be-all and end-all. The point is the concentrated mind has a chance to release, see, and then let go of some of the deepest attachments we have, the deepest clingings we have. And it's easier to let go of it in a concentrated mind because a concentrated mind is soft. The concentrated mind has already let go of so much. It's malleable. It's workable. It's ready. It's one of the words that's used. It's ready to do work. And so it's ready to kind of soft enough to be able to let go. If it's really constricted and hard, the mind, there's a lot of pressure in there, it's hard to let go. It's hard to soften further. It's hard to release. So the concentrated mind is an optimal mind for seeing what's going on deeply, and it's an optimal mind to be able to let go in some deep way. And then it is to come back with that release, that liberated mind, come back into the world again, and your thoughts are waiting for you. They're quite loyal. And so you don't have to, you're not abandoning them, you're not kind of abandoning your life, and you know, you're actually gaining your life. And here's an interesting perspective on this. What is that your natural mind? Your basic birthright, your most natural mind that you have. People who develop a concentrated mind are more likely to say that's the natural mind, that's the healthy mind, the mind that's concentrated, and that what we get to in everyday life with all that, that's not really so natural. That's more, I don't know if artificial is the right word, but that's more, that's a departure from the natural mind. And that's a departure from being at home in ourselves or being settled in ourselves or letting the deepest qualities of our inner life kind of operate in a healthy, harmonious, integrated way, that if you projected that on the wall, everyone would just go, oh, like that's like looking at a beautiful, you know, if we projected a beautiful scene of, you know, a path in the redwoods or in the oak woodlands around here, and a nice, quiet, peaceful day, and you know, ah, oh, that's nice with a creek going through it. Ah, oh, it's, you know, that's what, if we projected a mind that's concentrated on the wall, and could, and we'd be, have that kind of feeling of being in a natural setting, a natural place. Ah, oh, this is a good place to be. Remember when I was in Burma practicing there on retreat, I would get concentrated, and it was pretty nice. There was another person in the lodge we were staying, in the building we were staying, who clearly was deeply, deeply, deeply troubled. And we weren't supposed to talk to them, each other. But I had this fantasy, which I never acted on. I thought, if I could just get him to come and sit where I'm sitting, that'll take care of him. Because it just felt like this peace and subtleness and concentration was just kind of like, it was everywhere. It filled the room or filled the space, filled the bed. It's like, it was just not just in the little mind. The mind was kind of like large and expansive and open. And if I could just sit there, if he could feel this. So it's a beautiful thing, the concentrated mind. So I'll read you, to end this talk, a couple of these, a couple translations of the same description of a concentrated mind. A concentrated mind, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attain to imperturbability. So, second translation of the same. When the mind was thus concentrated, purified, bright, unblemished, rid of defilement, pliant, malleable, steady, and attain to imperturbability. When the mind is concentrated in this way, once it is thoroughly purified and cleansed, stainless, without defilements, having become sensitive, workable, and steady, reaching a state that is unshakable. And the last one, with the mind settled, clear and bright, unblemished, rid of defilements, soft, ready, workable, steady, and attained to imperturbability. And then what I didn't read was the last part of the sentence that goes something like this. With that kind of mind, one turns one's mind to the knowledge of the destruction of our attachments. So I hope that this has inspired you some, that it's a wonderful thing to engage in the practice of concentration, and to, it's a slow process, and it's probably the kind of process that many times you don't see the growth in a particular period of meditation, but over time, if you do it every day regularly, the mind is malleable, the mind is workable, the mind is can be trained and be developed. And you know, everyone has a capacity to develop their concentration, and so slowly, slowly, steadily, steadily over the days and weeks and months, the mind, you'll find the mind becoming more settled, more calm, more focused, and less distracted. And you might begin discovering the joy, the tremendous joy that can come from that. So may you become settled in your inner life. Thank you.